Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Finance Committee Meeting, complete recording, March 7, 2017.
70
or 80. You, Mr. Rockham.
To my left. Roll call.
David Rackham.
Bill England.
Napoleon.
Brian Malloy.
Joel Fishbach.
David Cohen.
Captain McGrady.
Okay, we can get a motion on approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Second. It's all in favor. And let's move right into the big thing, the 2017-2018 budget update. I'll pass over to Ms. Michael.
Okay, all righty. So we're going to take out and talk about all the buildings and talk about paint and all this stuff. So looking at the objectives for the 17-18 budget, we're talking about maximizing educational opportunities and resources for students, and that the objectives are centered on district goals and the strategic plan pathways, which are listed there. I also added cyclical facility maintenance. In doing this, we want to maintain financial stability and accountability. So I'm going to recap the first look at budget. We had a budget gap of 2.9 and some change. Part of that in the revenue, there was no tax increase factored into the real estate tax revenue. We did have some alignment of real estate tax collection to 96.4%, which is a good collection rate. We had some slight growth in Act 511 tax revenue, which is your EIT. That's the big bulk of it. Alignment of state subsidies. If you remember in previous budgets, when we went through the whole budget stalemate, we stopped everything at our allocations in 14-15, so we aligned that in our first look budget. And then there was some release of plan con funds for existing and approved projects. On the expenditure side, salaries, PESERS, transportation, and debt service were our main areas that drove expenditures. This is a snapshot of what it looked like with the $2.9 million gap. So, what administration has worked diligently to do to close this gap? We've looked to minimize the tax burden, trying to reduce below Act 1 index of 2.5, utilizing fund balance for one-time expenditures, remain consistent in aligning revenues with historical trend and collection rates, continue to collaborate with all budget administrators to ensure that departmental and site-based budgets are aligned with our budget objectives and goals, and to review and align all expenditures to ensure fiscal efficiency. So this is a snapshot of our 2017-18 recommended budget. I will go through the assumptions on both sides, but this is the snapshot look. So our recommended budget will minimize the tax burden. The tax increase will fall more than 30% below the Act 1 index. So we're looking at a 1.7% or 0.7666 millage increase. This will generate $1,378,000 and some change in additional tax revenue. This increase supports ongoing commitment to educators and capital projects. We're looking to commit $963,000 and some change of fund balance for the 17-18 budget. This will support finite commitment to strategic plan pathways and curricular initiatives. This commitment does not diminish the strength of our fund balance. So, this is just a snapshot. Act 1 index of 2.5 would have increased the median home owner taxes by $162.66 a year. The proposed increase of 1.7% increases it by $9.22 a month or $110.61 a year. Revenue assumptions, again, it's a tax increase of 1.7%. We align the 96.4% tax collection rate. The other thing is, I recently got our most recent board assessment for the county, and it went up slightly, so I was able to generate a little bit more tax revenue that way as well, so that was good. I think some of the settlement stipulations that have been coming through on the positive end has boosted that up slightly. It was about 0.2%, not a lot, but every little bit helps. Other local revenue trend continues between a 2 to 3% growth. And state and federal revenue reflects proposed allocations in our state budget. There's some slight increases. I went through that last presentation, and it's under, I believe, $300,000. So, on the expense side, the recommended budget will support collaboration for the future of our students. So this is just a visual of all the things that are developed and built into the 17-18 budget. And a lot of these things are ongoing from the 16-17 budget. So the 17-18 priorities that will continue to position our district for growth and change. Annually sustained expenditures, $610,000 and some change. Now I will tell you this, a big hit of that is the pre-K initiative, because what we're doing this year is we're reallocating our Ready to Learn block grant, which is about $300,000 for pre-K initiatives. So those are new initiatives that are in the budget, so that money had to be reallocated for the new initiatives. The other piece, when you see the salaries and benefits for the positions that are listed here, what we are really doing our due diligence is we are incorporating a cost analysis of existing staff structure. So what that means is when there's retirements, we're looking to make sure that we can fill possibly those retirements if they don't need to be replaced, to reallocate for these positions that we're looking to incorporate in the budget. So the budget is not fully paying for new positions with new money. We're looking to get some cost savings off of retirements and our existing staff structure to make sure that there's not teachers within the district that can be utilized to fill those needs. On the finite expenditure side, it's the fund balance utilization. So major areas in that is curriculum. If you remember last year, we had a curriculum audit. That curriculum audit identified some areas that we need to address on the curriculum side. So it's development and alignment of curriculum in core areas.
It identified a lot.
A lot, yes. A lot of areas. Yes. Implementation of academic intervention strategies, implementation of instructional technology resources, development and implementation of STEM curriculum. So those are major punch list items in there. If you remember, we phased the professional learning and research, so we're in phase three of that in the 17-18 budget. So it's a comprehensive literacy framework implementation, research-based response to intervention model, implementation on the professional learning and research of STEM program, continuum of technology platforms, and then the big one we've talked about is PBL, project-based learning. The other part that's in here, the Voyage Summer Experience that we piloted and kicked off last year, that was very successful. So expenditure assumptions, contractual obligations, and I punch list this the last time I presented, that our contractual obligations from salaries, benefits, our leases, utilities, technology renewals, transportation debt service, they take up the biggest chunk of our budget. It's about 85% to 90% of the budget. Other assumptions, as I just identified, is curriculum development and alignment. Strategic plan, in year one, we were in exploration. In year two, we're in exploration and adoption. We did also address this last presentation, that we are looking at analyzing existing programs and looking at the value-added component to that. So we're doing a lot of that analysis right now to try to reallocate or reduce costs in those areas. And then the facility maintenance and capital expenditures obviously have to be talked about in this budget. So another thing that we did, and it's a little bit of a scary slide, but it's forecast and things change every year. That's how we do budget. But we did a five-year projection out. And I'm going to go through this so that you can see the assumptions that were made into this. Very scary, yes. Yes. So we'll talk. We will talk on this. So you'll see that in 16-17 and 17-18, I have asterisks by the fund balance. That is because we committed that. That was what we wanted to do. We're looking to do that in 17-18. We did that in 16 and 17 for those one-time finite expenditures. So on the revenue side, and again, I use the PFM model to do my five-year projection. It's a forecasting model, so I pulled some of the assumptions on how I got to some of the revenue numbers and some of the expenditure numbers. So these are three different areas that piece together our real estate tax assumptions. So the first kind of block tells you our assessment. Like I said, we've had some favorable assessment appeals and stipulations. So that average is about 0.2% in growth every year. So that's the assumption that I used in a growth rate for our assessment. You'll see the millage rate. What I also did in the bottom part of the second block is you're looking at proposed tax increases. So you'll see in 17-18, that's the recommended 1.7. In 18-19, another recommended 1.7. Not saying that that's where it has to be, I'm just saying that that's where we're at right now for this assumption model. That could go up, obviously. Projected 19-20, 20-21, 21-22 is 2.4. Let me highlight what's happening in 19-20 and moving forward. That is addressing EP and capital expenditures in the high school. So if that does move forward as we identified in our five-year facilities plan, then we will need to do some borrowing of the neighborhood of about $66 million. That is the time frame that happens. Then on the bottom, that kind of just tells you what our tax revenue looks like after we take out our homestead money and we apply our collection rate. So other revenue assumptions, like local revenue assumes an average of about a 2% growth trend. That could go up a little bit, could go down a little bit. State and federal revenue assumes a flat line from 17-18 projected allocations. That excludes Social Security and PISAs because those subsidies they're dependent upon salaries. So as salaries grow, those subsidy reimbursements grow. We get 50% back from the state for both of those areas. So now we're going to go to the expenditure side. So PISAs, this is a big chunk of our benefit piece. Again, as salaries grow, so does PISAs. So this kind of gives you a projection out. You see on the, where it says PISAs contribution rates, those are the projected rates that we are going to see over the next few years. You will see that in 2020 and 2021, that it goes down, not by much, but at least it's going the other way, and it's not going up. So we plateau off, and then we start coming down a little bit. So the very bottom is our projected state reimbursement. That's the 50% that we get back from the state. Debt service. You saw this slide when I did the five-year facilities financing. This is, if we follow or continue the path along that five-year facilities plan and address EP and some things at the high school, this is the debt service that we would need of new money in order to meet those obligations. And this was created by PFM. So as you'll see, and one of the things I do want to talk about is due to the conversations that we've had about EP and some of the studies that we're looking at the time that we did the five-year facilities plan, those conversations weren't happening about researching different possibilities for use of EP and everything. So if you'll look at the timeline, we would be borrowing money in March of 2018. I actually backed that up. So that kind of gives us some room where we hit that $14 million mark. So that backs that up a year. So there was some slight alleviation on that with the discussions that's happening around there. So,
can I stop you one quick second?
Sure.
Where is the $14 million reflected on this?
Look at column 11.
Yeah, all the way over to the right.
Oh, okay, at the very bottom.
Yes. Actually, it's the third. It's the fourth row.
It's all the way down.
Fourth
row down.
Oh, yeah.
In the year
2020.
Yes. So the impact on this is basically about a $4 million increase to our debt service from where we are existing right now, when we decide to do this borrowing or when this borrowing is required. So some expenditure assumptions. Overall salaries increase by about 4% each year. BEC contract expires in June 30th of 2018. The CEA contract, believe it or not, will expire on June 30th of 2019. And I may be wrong on this. CASA, I thought CASA expired June 30th of 2019. It might be 18. It's 19. It's also 2019. So obviously in the five-year stretch, there's going to be some renegotiation of some contracts. So I just assume the 4% each year. We'll see moving going forward. Overall benefits increase by 6.3% each year. Debt service. It reflects the debt service based upon the five-year facilities plan. And again, I'm anticipating that the new issuance begin in March of 2019. So I will go back to that over arching slide that shows the revenues and expenditures, and you'll see where that hits. All the other expenditures reflects allocations for 2017-18 recommended budget. So this would be an area that, let me go back. Actually, I want to show you this slide
first. Including a staffing freeze.
Yes. That was for you guys. One of the things I did want to show, and I think this is an important slide, is that when we're looking at benefits, salaries, and debt service over the next 5 years, they account for 80.6% of our total budget. So they are pretty much non-touchables without reduction of some way. But they account for 80.6% of our total budget. So let me go back to this slide so that you can see. So where you're seeing the big hit in 2021, and 2022, that is when we're starting to assume more debt to address our capital needs. So that is why that hit is jumping so much in that year. So I just wanted to point that out. So our next steps, in March and April 2017, I will work on getting, when we get the kind of the okay on the recommended, I will get that on display in the PDE report format. That's going to have to happen anyway by May. We're required to have a proposed final budget adoption by a date in May, so that'll be at the legislative meeting in May, and then we will need to have a final budget adoption in the June legislative meeting. And here is the budget timeline that you are used to seeing. We are in March right now. We're right on track because we weren't looking for referendums. We didn't go through that process, so right now we're still in that phase of not having to take action on anything.
Well, I hope nobody kills himself right here, but we'll start with Mr. Rackner.
Thank you. Just a comment on a couple of questions. You know, we talk about, and we always talk about it, in this case, the percent is 80% of our budget is quote-unquote untouchable because it's locked in. It's locked in by, it's contractual at this point, that expenditure. But it is untouchable because it's locked in. It's not untouchable because it's some God-given magic figure, which just points out going forward why, in a couple of years, why, and nobody that's on this board doesn't understand that, but why negotiations are so critical, because it does lock us in then for 2, 3, or 4 years, whatever it is, to a very, very large percentage of what we have left over to utilize for education. So, and at PISR's is, of course, reflected in that piece of the budget. And I just did a quick calculation. I noticed that the increase in PISR's from 16-17 to 17-18 is almost as much as what our deficit is this year. $2.9 million, and the increase is $2.1 million. So it's just something to kind of be aware of. I know we all are, but the numbers get pretty scary. Even though the rate now is trying to level off, it's still really high and it's still going up. So as a percentage of whatever the contracts are, it's going to get bigger and bigger. I don't know if there's any way that we do that. Maybe did you get any indication? Is there any calculation that has been or can be done as to what the when the Cheltenham Mall comes online, what that will mean to us in terms of increased assessment?
At this point, no, because I don't know if you want to speak on it a little bit further, but I think that they're still in process with tenants and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So at this point, I think it's going to be a minute before we can even have an idea of what that's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know where we are or where they are in the process. I know they're building, they're working, but
yeah, I don't
know whether they have all their tenants and their ducks in order.
Yeah,
Yeah, briefly, I think it's probably several years away before the property gets reassessed, and that's being somewhat optimistic.
Wow.
And then you could always do back of the envelope calculations and guesstimate what the reassessment would be, the new assessment would be on the property, but that again would be a guesstimate at best, and you're probably getting several years out before that happens.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any idea, and I know it's probably going to be batted back and forth now, based on what I was hearing today, what the new health care law, which they're trying to, but that could have a major impact on what our costs are going to be, depending on where it goes. So I guess, it's so new that that's, who knows what that's going to turn out. Right. That's a major unknown.
Yeah, because I'm not clear in terms of what that would look like, even though there was some information that was publicly shared, but still, we're not sure.
Well, it was just released. So
yes.
And apparently it's known majorly contentious even within their own party, so within the Republican Party, so it's I don't think it's something that's imminent, but it will be.
But definitely a factor moving forward once we get the numbers.
Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Michaels, thank you very much for this presentation. I do appreciate the kind of overall objectives for developing the 2017-18 budget, being aligned with the five strands of the plan, but also improving the maintenance piece for the facilities, which I think is critically important. We've got to fold in for our budget projections. I do have a couple of questions in terms of the reviewing and aligning all expenditures to ensure fiscal efficiency. Could you give me some idea of what that looks like, what you were looking at?
Well, I think one of the biggest...
That's when the administration has worked diligently to close the budget gap, the last check mark.
So one of the... I think one of the biggest things that pops out to me, and I mentioned this when we talk about staffing, is really vetting staffing and trying to really review our current staffing and current schedules and all that whole big thing together, and looking at adding positions but not necessarily adding more money to fund those positions. So I think that that's a big one, and I think that that's, again, when we talk about the areas that are cost savers and that impact our budget, I think we talk about salaries and benefits being the biggest one. The other part is just making sure that I work very, very closely with all the budget administrators to make sure that their budget's aligned with the strategic plan, and that there were areas that that need to be addressed in the strategic plan that are happening at building-based or within the departments, that they're making sure that they inflate those into their budget. The other piece is I also gave allocations to the buildings this year, which that's something that was the first time that I've done since I've taken over budget. So I looked at historical spend, not necessarily historical budget, and made people go to work and crunch numbers and make sure that they could operate their buildings, but it was within the line item, within the allocations that I gave them.
I also want to say that soon, and seems like I can avoid these things since I've been here, which are very serious conversations, which is going to require the board to unpack, is that there are positions that we need that we believe better support and align the strategic plan. We also know that we just can't, that the money pit doesn't just keep going forever. So the conversation is cost savings with respects to realigning those and transferring that to this, but also the conversation that in that analysis, hypothetically, no one likes to cut staff. Because every single time you make a proposal about, we think we can streamline this area, then there's an outcry from individuals who have all of you on speed dial. And they want to know what's going on. What does this mean? Is this a reduction of service?
My 8-year-old is accustomed to having this, not that I don't want 7 or 8-year-olds or others to have those things. But I think that there is going to have to be, during my tenure, where I'm going to have to bring to the board and say, as the superintendent, I believe these efforts will streamline our budget. I believe that they won't negatively impact the services that we provide, even though taking anything away from anyone, regardless of what that takeaway is going to be perceived as a deprived of access, what they've been accustomed to, how can this happen? But in talking with Karen, thinking about long-term, that there is going to have to be those tough conversations where I'm going to have to bring to you, and some of you may disagree, some of you may agree, and the community may agree, and they disagree, they'll say, get it from someplace else. Everyone will tell me, go get it from someplace else. Go to that line, go to that line, go to that line, go to that line, until it doesn't, in fact, it doesn't impact them, but it impacts somebody else. But that somebody else is gonna tell me, well, why are you picking on me? Go someplace else. And since I can't go down the street and get it from our neighbors in the other district, we're just going to have to be extremely critical in terms of the way in which we're looking at that.
I heard Lower Murray has a really big surplus.
Yes. Matter of fact, Lower Murray contacted me and talked about a partnership they wanted to do with exchange students from China. And I said, Cheltenham is all about that. If you're going to pay the bill. We don't mind that type of exchange program.
Students, you contribute the money.
Yes, yes. But I wanted to say that because I know that that's a very sensitive topic to pick up. It's not to touch on. Not something we are definitely going to discuss tonight. But I wanted to at least put it on the record that Dr. Marseille has been looking at and being critical about the way we use staff. I understand everyone's going to argue for why they need it and why it shouldn't be taken away. And I'll deal with that and I'll try to make a compelling argument. But at some point, we're going to have that conversation where I'm going to have to convince you that I don't believe it compromises the quality of service that we provide, even though that may be something hard to process as I'm saying it, but anticipate that is the case. I'm not trying to take things away from children, have them, but we do have to think about the longevity of this district and the financial impact with all of the big projects that we've taken and a couple more that we're asking to take. And at this point, my business manager is telling me they can't keep paying for all of these things. Mm-hmm. Somewhere, we're going to have to make some really tough decisions, even though people don't like those tough decisions. Some of it will be reallocation of positions where we don't have a loss, but others will be, we might have to pull back from those, from personnel, think about how that could be moved forward.
Just two other questions. So, thank you, Dr. Marseille. So in terms of the fund balance, I think this slide you said that even by using the $963,000 for these finite costs and taking it from the fund balance, that's not going to diminish our strength? Because the slide says it does. So I just wanted to
point that out. Yes, it does not. Yes.
And would that still leave us with the 8%? In our fund balance?
I think we're below that. We're within the board policy. I think we're like 6.5 is where I had unassigned. But total, yes, we're above that.
Okay.
Yes, and if you remember, and I'm gonna kind of give you like the little net, because that's what we've been doing a lot. If you remember in 15-16, we had a surplus of 1.2. Mm-hmm. So if you look at what we're using, if we use the 874 that we had proposed for 16-17 plus the 9, if you net those two together, over the 3 years, we haven't really tapped into our fund balance as much as it seems like we have. Because it balances with the 1 year that you've increased. Mm-hmm. So it's not dipping below as much as you think of when you see those numbers. The other piece of that is last year when we presented budget and we talked about strategic plan and all the initiatives that we knew would have to come on the education side, we did talk about that there would be an ongoing commitment over about a 3 year period or a 4 year period to use about $2.5 to $3 million worth of fund balance to get us through those initiatives. So I think we're on target with that. I don't think it's out of the realm of where our initial vision was. I think we're continuing that path. I don't think it's a every year thing that we look to supplement the budget with fund balance. But I think for these one finite things, as we're going through the strategic plan, and we went through exploration, and now we're starting the adoption and the implementation and with curriculum, and aligning that all together, I think we're right on target.
And so it might be helpful, because that piece I missed, maybe even showing that in some kind of way, because I think the 1.3, the 1.2 we calculated before really does offset using the fund balance. And my last question is the scary side. Yeah. So I just want to make
Which
sure.
One?
I know, they're all pretty scary.
14 through 21.
Yeah. They're all pretty scary, but the one for the fiscal forecast for revenues and expenditures,
yep.
I just want to make sure I'm looking at that correctly.
Yep.
So you indicated that for 2019-20, that's really taking into consideration EP and the high school in terms of whatever we're going to be doing with EP and renovations at the high school. So that's really capital fund amount increases that we'll have to take into consideration.
It's that along with that 80% that I'm talking about in that growth. And again, it's a forecast model, so there's going to be things that happen in those years that may change. I'm projecting a 4% increase on salaries every year for the length of this. That's why I put in there we're renegotiating some contracts before some of these things are up. So the 4% might not be an actual number, but you need a basis on assumption. The other thing that it doesn't take into consideration is there's two huge things that are going to happen in 18-19, which could even flip it the other way. One is our transportation contract expires. So we're looking to go out to RFP. That'll be coming through the Financial Affairs Committee in the next few months here for that. So there's some savings there. The other huge thing is when Cedar Brook gets back to one building, there are some costs that we are taking up in our budget just because we're in three separate sites. It impacts transportation, it impacts salaries, it impacts benefits, because there's some things that we have to do because we're in three sites, people are traveling, people are missing preps, the kids are getting shuttled around because there's no field, so we're shuttling all over the place. Late buses are impacted with that because we're at three different sites. But we're still offering all the same services. I go back when we had our committee meeting, Mr. Malloy talked about the play and how great it was. And it is good, but you're shuttling kids from two different sites to get to the high school for play practice. And then there's late buses to take them home. So that is going to, I think, impact what 18-19 looks like, because we have some opportunities for cost savings. That'll really be the first year that we can get into the nitty-gritty of cost savings, because Cedar Brook will be back together.
Just to follow up with it, but that's not hopefully that's not projected into
18. No, it's not.
So that's good.
No,
that's good.
No, it's not.
That answered my question.
Yes, but this slide really just is troubling, because to make up a $1 million gap, a $2 million gap is one thing, but when I'm looking at 2021 and 2021-22, those are identical.
There.
$9 million,
yes.
And $10 million gaps. Where in the world would you get that?
Again, then we have to think creative about decisions on what happens with the debt service and how you're borrowing. So you're looking at borrowing $66 million and what that looks like and what we're utilizing with that $66 million and what projects are being done. again, there are contracts that are in play here. So even though it is a huge and staggering number, there are going to be some things that could bring that number down, and it starts in 18-19.
Right. So hopefully we can see some of that, because yes. I think those numbers are just...
Yeah.
But I wanted to put the realisticness of it on where we're at right now and the commitments that we've made right now with future commitments that are possibly down the pike in the next year and a half. So this kind of puts the numbers to it, and it paints a picture. I mean, are we going to be $9 million? Obviously, we're going to have to make some decisions to not get there. But this just shows you, if we continue along the path and don't make those decisions, where we'll be.
So there's assumptions built in there.
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Ingram.
Yes. Nightmares all night. I wanted to clarify something that you said a couple times. You've referred to salary increases at 4%. What does that mean when you say that? Those contracts were not 4% increases on an individual basis.
Not individual, but we have four groups, because you have non-contract employees, you have administrators, you have BEC, and you have the teachers.
So I just wanted to clarify that we did not hand out 4%.
No, that was not for the CEO. No,
I understand that. I said it on both of those negotiations, but I just wanted to clarify
that.
That's
why I said overall district salaries.
Yes. So I had a question about the, thank you for your work, the presentation, and for making us aware of some of the other innovative things you've been doing, like the budget allocation and the management with the building administrators. It's all moving us certainly in the right direction. The question was, so over the last couple years we have refinance bonds, and that's produced some savings, some unexpected savings. Do you foresee any of that going forward, or are those days behind us now?
We actually just did a bond refi of our 2009 bonds, which gave us some savings, and what they did was they used it to smooth it out, knowing that we have this looming possible add-on. We were looking to refi another set of bonds, but the market, it didn't make sense at the time, so we're kind of on hold with that right now. But we did have a 2017 refinancing plan, so part one and two were already done. We were waiting to see if three and four make sense. So that's where we're at right now. So we've done as much smoothing out that we can do. I'll have to talk to Brad on 2018. I think they want to kind of give the bond people a break from here in Cheltenham for a year, but I will definitely talk to him, and you know, we're always in communication about what our capital needs are and what that looks like and how that impacts our debt.
I don't care if they're hearing it in their sleep. I keep saying Cheltenham. We need all the help we can get with this projection. And in Peasers, I mean, we thought we were evening out and got a surprise issue, correct?
Yes, a little bit. It was a little higher than, they certified a little bit higher than we had anticipated or what was projected. So this is actually PISA's projections that you're seeing on there after the 2017-18. So it could end up higher.
Yeah, if they gave you these projections at 8% to them?
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
I mean, the one thing I will say with that is 50% of that comes from the state, so as we have to pay, the state has to figure out how to pay.
Up to this point in time.
Up to that point, yes.
Yeah, up to now,
yes.
Let's be clear. it's not a well-lit future we're looking at. So with all that in mind, I think that longer term, Dr. Marseille, we want to think about continuing to step up the education of our community about public education finance. I don't mean going down into these kind of details, and I certainly don't mean showing projections that we're not completely certain of yet. They seem likely. And I think we want to, maybe we want to be a little more active with PASBO and the other organization in terms of PSBA. in terms of our activities, I don't mean locally, but I mean at the state capitol, and maybe trying to, you know, through education and whatever, be able to increase the number of voices. It's not a partisan issue. It's a budget issue. It's nonpartisan, but 500 school districts are facing this. We have a legislature right now committed to nothing. They want to give out $100 million. Is it $100 million for EITC? They continue to, you know, look at more vouchers and other things. And
a little like QI.
He wasn't smacking the budget. I just want
to bring it up. I'm going to go home and blow it up. But yeah, I think that we need to think like beyond typically, you know, what we have really thought about. It's 500 school districts that are being hurt badly by inaction in Harrisburg and the lack of willingness to do some things. Again, I'm not being partisan. I'm talking about the reality, what comes out of the end of the sausage machine. And we don't even have any idea as to what month in the fall or winter they may pass this coming budget. So anyhow, what I'm saying is thank you.
Yeah. Could you tell me more about what our pre-K program initiative is? So I saw obviously that was one of the major items for the redirection of...
So Ready to Learn block grant funding, one of the areas that we utilized it before when it was...
It was called something.
It was right. Ready to Learn block grant. I can't think of it. But we supplemented kindergarten aides with that. There are other things where Ready to Learn block grant focuses more intensely on, and that's pre-K initiatives. Mm-hmm. So some of the discussions that we had was...
So what we are seeing is a very large number of our students, pre-K, that we need to provide some services for, to offset some of the challenges that they are coming into the district with. And that number is much larger than I anticipated. And speaking with student services and special education, I said, we have to do something for these particular students because they are going to enter our doors very soon. And we don't have the human resources to pour as much as needed into those students. So we need to start a program over the summer that attempts to provide them with some instruction, attempts to provide them with some set of norms and protocols, get them familiarized with being in school, and begin to prepare them for some of the challenges that they're going to see. So when I saw the need, when I saw the large number, and I saw the need, I asked the curriculum team to rethink the way in which they are using their resources, and something has to happen for those 40-some-odd students who we anticipate so far coming into our district.
So, and I guess, did I miss this conversation? So are we then thinking that, I mean, it's March now, I'm thinking come June or July that we're going to be reaching out to those 40-some-odd?
Yes.
Okay. And is this going to be an increase? You mentioned that perhaps the block grant focuses more heavily on pre-K. Would there then be an increase in revenue? I mean, I guess it's the state and their allocation. They probably aren't going to increase anything this year. But maybe for next year, is this become an increase in revenues from them, or is this just...
Those are grants.
Yeah. Those are money being set aside to say, we can use for these three things.
I remember this called something else before.
Yeah.
Accountability block grant.
Yeah.
There you go.
Those three things, we've been using that money. The current landscape with the large number of students who are coming to the district who have significant needs, I asked the team to rethink about the Calumny Block Grant and to rethink what exactly are we going to do for those particular students. They are in our community, they're in our schools, and we need to provide more than others a significant amount of support for those children.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, of course.
About how many students are we thinking for the Voyage Summer Experience? What do we think an enrollment would be in that?
I think we've looked at no more than 500 and some change.
Students?
Yes. We're going with close to 300 students.
Okay. What's that? That's a cool elementary school.
It's not
that.
Yeah, so it's about 340.
We're expanding it by 100 students.
We're adding rising second and rising seven. Then I'm mistaken.
Okay.
Obviously, that shocked a lot of people.
that's a cool elementary school.
So we're adding a cohort of how much is it?
250.
Okay. Yeah.
So I mentioned this in our
my budget for buses.
Okay. I mentioned this in our subcommittee meeting. I would love to and I'm all for summer experiences. Can we make that cost neutral? Can we charge them?
This is the last year in which we are not going to request a fee.
Okay.
We do not know what that is. In our communication with parents this year, they are going to be informed that year one, yes. Year two, yes. But year three, we are going to determine that there will be a cost.
Okay.
To that.
I agree. It's like a summer camp. It's a 4-week program.
Yeah.
Is it 4 weeks?
Yeah, 4 weeks, at least 8 to 3 or whatever.
Rising second and seventh graders. Yes.
So there are
two parents who did come to me and asked for that, which is good, they wanted the district to think about additional programs, but programs that they think they're willing to pay for. It's just that could it be housed within that. But the Voyage program, in my mind, has always been an introductory to here's the service we provide, here's year two, and then year three, for me, was always at some point, we can't continue to offer that summer experience without asking parents for some type of expense.
Yeah, I mean, in the end, it's, you know, especially for programs like Voyage, pre-K is perhaps not so much. I mean, I have to look at those programs that, again, we're effectively charging and asking all taxpayers to provide, yet providing value for a select few of our students.
And most of them probably could afford to pay for.
I mean, Voyage, folks have after school, you know, and summer camp dollars that they're going to be thrilled to not have to pay for it. I mean, Voyage makes the most sense to certainly make that cost neutral. To me, the pre-K initiatives piece just gets back to, I'm just thinking of how much money we spend per child in kindergarten versus all the other years. And I'll put pre-K in with the kindergarten. That's going to be a mind-blowing number.
That's an investment.
What makes... Yes, it is. I mean, it's an investment always. The question is it better in pre-K or is it better in third grade?
We need pre-K real bad.
Maybe
now, maybe later.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
What I will say is that there will have to be some summer experiences that for the students that need the most significant support, that we're going to have to find the funds to support that because the summer loss here is real. The students that see most of the summer loss are students who fall in our historically underperforming category, and low SES is part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that if I can use Bill for example, falls within that category, that the price doesn't affect his participation, because I know he is a year and a half behind, and I need him and his family to understand I need Bill for 8 weeks, and I have to find a way to, as a district, balance the fact that the 8 weeks would do significantly good work versus how much do we charge parents for that, so it doesn't become a hurdle for them to do that.
And I would,
but I agree that we'll have to think through those.
I mean, if we could then focus and build that narrative and then allocate dollars appropriately for, part of our remediation is utilizing the summer, because I've always argued that otherwise the expectation that you remediate during the school year makes absolutely no sense, because students who are running at 90% of, what you would hope to get in class, the next year have to then run at 115% of what you'd expect just to try and get caught up. What makes you think they're not going to run at 90% again? So I appreciate, but from a budgetary perspective, I want to at least make sure that we're not kind of throwing dollars at problems, but at least it's a very concerted effort of remediation strategy. The forecast that looks at, projected 2019, 2021, there are a couple things in here that I know we're going to have, right? So we're going to have to do something with Cedar Brook, whether it's $30 million or $60 million. I'm sorry, EP. We're going to have to do something with EP, whether it's $30 million or $60 million. This also has baked into it for those out years, 19 through 21, pretty much what we would expect for an Act 1 index. So this is a max tax increase each year for each of those years. I'm not thrilled about the revenue assumption. I don't see much chance of avoiding the expense assumption, which leads me to say if we have those two and are looking at anywhere from a $4 to a $10 million budget gap, I understand 21, 22 is pretty much, it's really hard to focus on, but 2019, 2020 is a very concerning number for me. And to be able to continue to move on with, well, we have a solution to this year's budget, so let's move on with that and we'll come up with 2019-20 a year from now or 2 years from now, it doesn't make any sense. I would love for this portion of, not today's meeting, but the Finance Committee, we need to start to say, how in the world are we going to identify those major levers that we're going to pull, push, whatever, to at least get 2 years out, 3 years out, there's no reason that that's, fog of war. That has to be understood relatively soon, because you're going to have to make changes and you're going to have to think about educational strategies that will make that 2019-2020 budget work, and you're probably thinking about them now. And so, I think if the assumption here is, how are you going to come down and staffing by 5% or something like that, great, but I'd love to be able to have this committee, when we approve a budget, when we approve a calendar, to at least have some understanding of, what is the budget framework that you're operating under. And in my mind, that gives you greater flexibility. You're able to plan better 3 years from now, understanding our current framework. It's my personal preference. And fiscally sound practice. Is that it?
Okay, go.
Mr. Fishbowl.
I would
pass.
Sorry.
Where are you going?
We need an Uber. We need an
Uber.
Sorry.
It's
like
10 o'clock.
Uber's here.
We need a little levity at this point.
I'll start with what I assume are negative things first, and maybe we haven't looked at in terms of expenses, which isn't your fault, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, if you happen to be wrong. One is, does this include the forecast and the additional debt projections? Does it include money for fixing Ivy Hill? is the first question, and tied into that, does it also include what we're doing with this building, either with renovations and or sooner or later, and we put it off for a long time, but at some point we have to resolve the administration issue and the associated costs for facility for administration?
Yes. Ivy, no, yes. Administration, no.
Okay. Second question is there any...
Wait a minute, this... I'm sorry. The proposed $60 million, is that what you're talking about?
Well, a combination of the projected new debt and also looking at...
I thought that money...
$60 million would include an add...
One of the options within the KCBA report included a new admin building as part of that.
Okay.
And that the additional money was money we borrowed for future projects for the high school. So that, I do believe that total amount does speak to the admin being at Elkins Park.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yes and yes.
And the other question, I'm not sure if I can answer, but it's more an historical question looking forward. What's the basis upon which the state pays half the cost of users? Is that, have they just been doing that routinely? Like, my question is, in terms of doom and gloom, with the state having their own huge budget issues, is there any guarantee they're going to pay that 50% going forward? There's no requirement, I assume.
They have generally paid at least 50%. But what they would likely do is they would keep doing that, but they just suck out all the grant dollars. They just reallocate other grant dollars to...
Just like there's no legal requirement for
this. That's really my question. And Napoleon...
It's in the Constitution, but it doesn't make
sense. Is a valid point also. Would they compensate by taking money from elsewhere as those costs go up in stateside? The one idea I want to float, not probably for discussion tonight, and I've mentioned it before, is the idea of, again, looking at municipal authority for debt, which, again, don't revisit it tonight, but has several benefits. One is it is a way to bring in some meaningful new revenue from some other sources in the township. There are a lot of pros and cons and potential pitfalls with it, but if we're looking at creative solutions and ways to partly obviously reduce expenses, but probably much harder to increase revenues, that's one way to conceptually increase revenues. And maybe if I can talk with the administration about that later, and maybe the board leadership to figure out a way to advance that conversation, if people feel it's worthwhile advancing, not at this meeting, since it's very complex again, but in future meetings. Thank you.
The pilot ought to be discussed at some point.
Ms. Gray, do you
Fund balance and the pre-K questions were asked, but in talking about the pre-K, another question came up. You mentioned about 40 or so students.
That was the last number we were looking at.
And this is really not so much budget related, but how are you identifying 3K needs, students who are
there were early intervention students that had need through special education.
But they have they pre-registered.
They were going.
Like
they're
way,
going
way
to.
Way
they're going to start. They're going to start
right.
Kindergarten. Yes.
So then I guess the number obviously could go up.
Yes.
Since kids don't register typically. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'm just wondering about that. That was the other questions were answered.
We have some
quick one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just wanted to float an idea out both a pre-K program in general, not necessarily a pre-K program with children who are being identified as special needs and therefore need that head start.
Yes.
But just having a pre-K program in general, just to level the playing field for all children coming
sure.
in, as well as the summer school programs we're talking about, like the Voyage program and whatever. Have we looked into or discussed it at all, or discussed internally, the idea of going beyond our borders, and if these programs are so worth it and well-developed, maybe bringing students in, having students, opening up to students beyond our district for, obviously on a tuition basis, if they're going to pay for camp, they're going to pay here.
Yeah.
If it's a good program, why not? You don't have to increase a teacher to add one more student in, but you could wind up with X number of dollars and to offset the cost of the program.
Haven't thought about that since some of all of our work has been in the infancy stage, where year one of trying to find a
brand the type of program we offer at the Voyage. I think moving forward with year three, we can extend that. And with anything else that your marketing people want to know, well, what is it, how well do you do it, and do you do it better than other people? And is it a bang for my buck? So until we can get some of those things up and running to show individuals this is what we offer, and then use that as a possible...
It's also a matter of access. I mean, there could be other programs like this somewhere in Harrisburg, or somewhere in Camp Hill, or somewhere in Pittsburgh. But for the districts that surround Cheltenham, who might look at an aggressive, you know, really strong program, in 1 year we're going to have 3 years under our belt, and be offering and offering it as a pay-for-play program in our district. Why wouldn't we offer it to Jenkintown and you know, Springfield and Abington, whoever, you know, that have easy access to Cheltenham? I mean, it's a matter of where, it's not always a matter of who else is offering it. It's a matter of can I get to it if anybody or somebody else is offering it. I'm talking about young kids, so.
Quick one?
Very quick one. Ms. Michaels, where does the foundation fit into our projected revenue assumptions? Does it?
Not there
the
yet.
Foundation.
Not yet.
The foundation?
Yeah.
You want to add $50,000?
I would love to. It may not yet, but I would, you know, hopefully as things get up and going, then we should be able to have a line item for expected revenue that can be generated by the foundation. Or am I
up high
as that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not there yet. I'm hoping we get there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Through fundraising, serious fundraising, not through bake sales. And
So maybe as part of the communication and engagement pathway, as we're looking to strengthen partnerships, that if we help to develop the foundation in ways in which exemplary foundations across the country have been known to raise astronomical amounts of money, that we can look at that, but we have to build that first. They've been supplementing so much of our teachers who are making requests for small grants, but haven't generated that level of money to make a big shift within our budget. I don't know how much money they raised last year. I believe it was like 30.
That sounds right. And that all goes to teacher grants.
Teacher grants? Yeah.
It's a nice supplement. You know, you're right. It is a question we're going to be asking more, I think, going forward.
It's going to come with some expense.
I just had a couple of comments. I'll make them quick because I know everybody's tired. I think as a board administration, I kind of fall from what Mr. Nelson said, Dr. Moore said, we have to start making tough decisions not 2 years from now. We have to start making them this year. I look at those projections, it almost gives me a heart attack. So, and Ms. Michaels is doing a terrific job. I mean, it's great work with her. I know I don't know when she sleeps, because I got an email from her. It's like 4:50 a.m. So I guess she gets a couple hours sleep every
change
night.
Change her time zone so it can look like that.
But
it's just that she took a long lunch, you know.
Change it to San Diego time.
Absolutely.
All our meeting times are first thing in the morning.
Yeah. Well, in terms like looking at, take a long, hard look at staffing. I think with the new contract, it gives Dr. Marseille more flexibility. Let's say we have better scheduling in Cedarbrook and the high school. You know, you've got to look at eliminating positions. We have 7 phys ed teachers. I'm all for phys ed, but maybe if students don't sign up for those programs before they had to take phys ed every year, they don't sign up for those programs, we got to look long and hard. I don't want a bunch of classes with 10 kids in it. I'm not saying there are. I'm just saying that's something we've got to look at. I know Jim does a real hard job with these. My big thing is these late buses. I'd like to get rid of them all together, but I guess they would not like me in Cheltenham. But I don't care. I mean, a lot of high schools don't have them. We pay far more than any other district in Montgomery County on late buses. I could see with consolidating Cedarbrook and looking at buses, I would like to see that. It's going from 7 million right now. I'd like to see it get down to 5 million. I think we can do it.
That is one of the
tough conversation.
That's right.
That I was talking about, but I just didn't name it.
Yeah,
I mean, you just named it.
That's a long conversation. There's also access.
Bam.
Yeah, a lot of schools don't even offer.
I mean, I've seen
certain
situations, but high school kids taking light buses at 6, I'm sorry, they can get a ride on it.
No, they all cannot get a ride.
Well, let's debate.
All right. And we got to look at this. I know this is kind of a pet peeve for Mr. Nelson at age and all the kindergarten classes. And I know, but, I mean, it's something we got it. We have to start looking at these
Mr. Malloy, I want to tell you that in my previous experience in watching that happen at other places, that this is what I said. To what extent is the board willing to stand it? Because
I'm willing to back all the way.
When push comes to shove, and not only this district, and other districts, that when that conversation comes up, everyone's gung-ho about it until there's a litany of parents who come out and say, not my child, and before you know it, the board who was excited, I'm not saying this board, who wanted to go and cut it, 35, 50, 100 people come out and they're like, no, not only are we not gonna cut it, we're gonna put it in writing that we'll never bring this up ever again for another 25 years.
I would argue that if we're not ready to start having those conversations, then we need to make this a max increase instead of a 1.7. Because 1.7s aren't gonna close a $4 million budget gap in 2 years.
Also,
you need max tax revenues to close a $4 million budget gap in just 2 years.
And Montgomery County increased taxes by 11%. I mean, we just can't keep doing it. And I think we have to make some hard decisions in terms of trying to reduce our borrowing from that $66 million. That's my final comment, and I'll go out to the public. Please just identify yourself.
My name is Dan. I live over in Elkins Park somewhere. I was just curious, do we have, I'm sure somebody's done analysis, so you mentioned where we're spending more than comparable districts.
Right.
When looking at costs, is there a report like that out there somewhere where we're spending more and where it might be a good argument?
Well, we benchmark with other districts. There's a software technology system that we have that allows us to benchmark. It's with the AFR data that comes out through the state. Publicly, you can pull AFR data and start to benchmark from district to district. But other than that, we do, and as a Montgomery County Business Managers Group, we talk a lot about benchmarking, and we bounce stuff off of each other with that when things like that happen. So that's how we kind of collect the data.
Okay.
And busing is part of that. And with all due respect, and I'm not bashing teachers or administrators, and just saying fact that we have some of the highest salaries in Montgomery County, not only with our CEA staff, which I deserve their money fine, but we also have administrators who also have some comparable to others. When we talk about benchmarking, that's another area as well when we take a look at that as well. And I know that sometimes you bring that up, people mistaking you for saying somehow you don't appreciate people, but that's not the case. It's just that within those three areas, they are different in terms of other.
You said it was public, meaning I could go out and go check it out. And
if you go on the PDE website, you can pull anybody's AFR data.
What's
the
AFR statement?
The annual financial report.
Myron Goldman, Elkins Park. First of all, once again, thank you so much for the transparency in the budget process. It's extremely refreshing. Kara, the number of teachers at the maximum, masses plus 36 max, do you anticipate any significant changes in the numbers of teachers at that level over the next couple of years?
We will not know until there's a deadline for retirements. That's usually the deadline. It's
April 15th.
It's mid-April,
okay.
So we honestly don't know until that time period.
Okay. Do we have an idea of how many of those teachers are at least 35 years experience? You don't have that.
How many are at that step?
Yeah.
Half.
I don't know.
About half. About half the teachers.
Oh, I know how many are at the step. There used to be about 173. I don't know what it is this year.
Oh, I don't know that.
But, no, my question was, see, you know, how many are at around 35 years of experience? Make some projections. How many might
teams.
Be retiring versus how many moving up? Because that's, what's that number this year? It used to be 109. What's the salary at that level now with the new contract? About 111?
111,
yeah. I mean, it's like twice what a beginning teacher costs. Okay, that was just a question. And of course, backing up what Dr. Marseille said, I just say it again. Sorry, Dave, but you know, the board controls salaries until they sign the contract. Enough said.
Okay, let's move on quickly to our overview of our 16-17 budget. Ms. Michael.
Not as scary as the
other. It's not scary.
Yeah.
She's right. This is going to be fun.
Okay, so here's a snapshot. We're at 86.51% of our revenue collections. We're at 63.62% of our expenditures.
Not yet.
So you'll see in some of the areas that are the highest, we've either met our obligations or there's encumbrances there, and that is at the bottom of the slide. You can't see that there. This is another snapshot, shows in the category areas. So you'll see, again, I always point this out, the tuition for cyber and charter school, there are encumbrances there. So don't panic that we only have $43,000 to spend for the rest of the year. We have encumbered those funds on anticipated costs throughout for the entire year. So those are included in that year-to-date number. Same thing with the equipment and software platforms. That's a lot of the technology stuff that we know are monthly and reoccurring, so that we encumber those each year too. And that's it.
Any quick questions for the board? Can I make a motion? Any from the public? Okay, you can make a motion.
Motion.
Denied. All right. Nice.
This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivation 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us, and have a great day.